Welcome to the Fed Life Podcast with Dan Seip from Serving Those Who Serve. In this podcast, Dan draws from years of financial experience to help federal employees overcome challenges that every Fed can relate to. Join us for this journey as we reach, teach, and serve to help you make the right financial decisions. Now, on to the show.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Fed Life Podcast. Once again, I am your host, Dan Seip, and additionally, as I've said in the past, I'm the branch manager here at Serving Those Who Serve and Lee Seip & Associates. I will begin as I always do. Thank you for taking time to listen, and thank you for your service. You do not hear it enough. And during these times, I want to ask you all to please stay safe, stay healthy. We need you. You're important. So please take care of yourselves. We're back again with the guru, the inimitable, the incomparable Ed Zirndorfer, as part of our ongoing mission to reach, teach, and serve you. Unfortunately, at the outset, I always have to say this, the opinions of Ed Zirndorfer, even though they are awesome, are not the opinions of Raymond James or Serving Those Who Serve. This podcast is presented for information only and not intended to be taken as advice. All listeners should consult their personal advisors before taking any action. So, on to what we're talking about today. Once again, Ed has written two articles for us in the Fed Zone, which you can find at blog.stwserve.com or at fed-zone.com. And it's discussing employee eligibility for the FERS, MRA, minimum retirement age, plus 10 retirement. Sometimes it's called a postponed retirement. This is a unique feature for FERS, and a whole lot of people know very little about it or just enough to be dangerous. And that's what we're going to tackle today. So Ed's articles, as they always are, were very interesting and informative. So we thought we'd tackle this. There's a lot of great info here, Ed, in your articles, so let's get started. Would you sort of briefly explain what an MRA plus 10 or postponed retirement is?
Yes, Dan. Many employees think that they have to work the full 20, 30, or more years in the federal government in order to get a retirement. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there are employees who don't work that long, and they come to the conclusion that if I don't work the full amount of years I'm supposed to, I'm not going to get anything. Well, that's not true. There are ways that employees can either retire early or perhaps not actually retire, but leave the government and get their retirement income later. Okay. And one of the ways is who was called an MRA plus 10 or postponed retirement. Now, again, this is only for FERS employees. Mm-hmm. A little bit later, we're going to be talking about deferred retirement, which is available to FERS employees, and also to CSRS employees. Mm-hmm. We'll be talking about that later. But for right now, we're talking about the MRA plus 10 retirement. That is, again, only for FERS employees who meet the requirements for this opportunity to retire earlier than expected.
Okay. And in your article, you mentioned that there are five conditions that need to be met to be eligible for MRA plus 10. So why don't you list those and then we'll dig into them.
Okay. In order to be eligible for an MRA plus 10 postponed retirement, a FERS employee has to fulfill five requirements. They are: the employee has to have a minimum number of years of civilian service, and that minimum number is 5 years. Again, it has to be civilian. We're going to get into a little more detail here in a moment what that means. The second requirement is the employee must have reached what is called his or her minimum retirement age, or MRA. Mm-hmm. The third requirement is the employee must have at least 10 years of federal service, at least 10 years. You mentioned earlier the employee has to have a minimum number of years of five, but to get the MRA plus 10, they actually have to have a minimum number of years of 10, to have 10 years of federal service, which could include, let's say, 5 years of military service that they made deposits. So they could have 5 years of civilian service and 5 years of military service that they made a deposit for, they bought back.
Okay.
The fourth requirement is the employee must be separated from a position covered by FERS. What
so
that means is that when they were actually working, covered by FERS, paying into the FERS retirement system, each payday they were payroll was taking out a certain amount of money from their paycheck to put into the FERS retirement disability system. so they actually had to be covered by FERS. And the fifth requirement is that the employee could not be eligible for what is called a regular immediate retirement. They had fulfilled the minimum age and service of retirement to retire right away. It was called an immediate normal retirement. So those are the five basic requirements.
Okay. So that first condition that you said needs to be met, minimum civilian service, you kind of wrap that up for us. So if they've got at least 5 years civilian, then they can use 5 years military or that sort of thing. One of the things that you note in the article is that it's based on creditable civilian service. So why don't you touch on that a little bit, because folks may not be familiar with that term.
So creditable civilian service, Dan, would include the time that they worked as a FERS employee, and a certain amount of money was being taken out of their paychecks. For most years, it's actually 0.8%, that's 0.008 of their of their gross wages was being taken out to put into the FERS Retirement Disability Fund. That's their contribution that they're putting in each pay date. And it could have included temporary time, or what's called intermittent service, in which they were not paying into the FERS retirement system. They were temporary employees. They were paying taxes, but nothing was coming out to put into any retirement system. That's called temporary time. And if they made a deposit for that temporary time, assuming that temporary time occurred before January 1st, 1989, they would get credit for that as far as civilian service is concerned, civilian service. Now, please, let's differentiate between temporary time and military service. Yes, you can make a deposit for military service, but that would not count towards the 5 years here. We're talking about temporary time. Give me an example, Dan. Let's suppose an employee worked over the summer as a summer intern at an agency, worked at one of the national parks, one of the national parks. Over the summer, worked at NIH as an intern over the summer, National Institutes of Health. They were being paid, but they were not contributing to any retirement system during that time. If that service occurred before January 1st, 1989, and once they were hired as a permanent employee, they could have made a deposit for that. And if they did, they'll get credit for that. There's some other examples in which they would get credit for civilian service. There were some employees who used to be under CSRS. They came over to FERS. Maybe they left the government and then came back. But they had some prior CSRS service, let's say 3 or 4 years. Well, CSRS employees, while they do not pay into Social Security, part of their paycheck there's enough in their paycheck that could have been contributed to FERS, so they would get credit for that time that they worked as a CSRS employee. And there is one, and so those are the three categories of three types of what's called service that would be so-called creditable civilian service.
Alrighty, and then the next one, I think. Well, I'll tell you, I meet a lot of people in FERS, and boy, do they know their MRA. they know the earliest time they can go out. And Ed, you put a great table in the article, but sort of to round that out, if for folks born between 1948 and 1970, it's a sliding age scale between 55 and 57. And I think that's probably an easy way to cover that for when people don't have the table in front of them. And you determine your MRA according to your birth year. Okay, so third is that 10-year service requirement. And I think you did a pretty good job of putting those pieces together so they can have 10 straight years of FERS service. They might have some CSRS service in there. They might have some temporary service that they put a deposit in to get credit for that as long as it was before 1989. And they could have some military service to get to that point. Okay.
That's correct. But it has to be minimum 5 years of civilian.
Yep. Okay. So I think we got that pretty clear to get to the 10. And next condition, the employee must separate from a position covered by a FERS deduction. So basically that means they were paying into FERS at the time they were separating, correct?
That is correct. Okay. And I'll give you an example of such a person. There are some FERS employees, not a lot, I would say, who were covered under CSRS. They had a choice, CSRS employees, in either 1987, 88, or 1998, to voluntarily come over to FERS in a so-called open season that the Office of Personnel Management held. These people, if they came over, they had at least 5 years of CSRS service, and they came over to FERS. These are called transfers, so to speak. And when they retire from federal service, were entitled to both a CSRS annuity and a FERS annuity. But when they retired, they were paying into FERS, so they would be eligible for this MRA plus 10 postponed retirement too. I really don't think there are that many people who are in that category, though, because they're a lot older right now.
And the last thing you touched on, I think it makes sense, but you know, let's just spend a minute on it. The employee can't be entitled and eligible to just a regular retirement, so they can't be sitting there at 60 with 20 years of service where they could just go out on that and do this, correct?
That is correct. You know, Dan, during the seminars, I get this question quite often from employees. I just got to give you a little background information. If somebody retires under FERS before age 62, the formula to calculate their FERS annuity is years/months of service times 1% times their high three average salary. Years/months times 1% times their high three average salary. If they retire at age 62...
You're getting to my favorite part.
Then the formula to calculate the FERS annuity is years/months of service times 1.1%.
Yep.
Times their high three average salary. They're getting a 10%. If they must have at least 20 years of service at age 62 to get that 10% bonus, that 1.1% accrual factor. So assuming they have at least 20 years of service. They retire at age 62, they're going to get a 10% bonus for the rest of their life. They're getting the 1.1% accrual factor. So the question I get is, someone in the class says, Ed, you know, I'm 60, I got 20 years of service. How about this? I'll take the postponed retirement. I'll take the postponed retirement. And this way, when OPM computes my annuity, starting when I'm 62, they'll use the 1.1% accrual factor. Now, Dan, what do you think the answer is I want to give them? Can they do that?
I think the answer is they can't because they're eligible to go at 60 with 20.
That's right. They can't. They are accomplishing absolutely nothing by deferring their annuity. And OPM will not allow that. They have to, if they want to retire, they have to retire at age 60 because they have the required number of years, 20, and start with an immediate annuity right away. It starts right away. They have no other choice.
That's when I do my level best to convince folks that you can do 2 years. You can absolutely do 2 years to get that.
Take it out 10%. Two more years.
There we go. Okay. And as you cover in the article, the commencement date for the annuity follows the FERS rules first to next month. But you pointed out there are a couple of exceptions. So let's talk about them. There's two exceptions, right? And what's the first?
The first exception is the expiration of a term. Let's suppose an individual is working a period of service. He or she was appointed or elected, and that period of that the person was serving was actually ended. If the person has reached his or her MRA and has at least 10 years of service, then the annuity starting date would be the day after separation. And the other exception, and we're going to talk more about that here very shortly, is that the employee decides, I want to postpone the start of my annuity. I don't want to receive it right away. And there's a reason why the person may not want to receive the annuity right away, because they're too they're they're under the age in which they can get a full annuity. Their annuity is going to be reduced. So they decide, I want to start the annuity so that there's no reduction to my annuity. I'm going to postpone it. And we're going to talk about it here in a few moments, what that age is. So they voluntarily postpone it.
Actually, we're kind of right up to that as far as the postponed annuity. And basically what we're going to want to do with that is we're going to want to make sure that we don't get a permanent reduction. So that would be one of the big reasons why somebody might do that. So why don't you jump in on that? And folks, again, Ed goes into a lot more detail in the articles, so feel free to listen to this and read through the other one at the same time or at different times. You're going to get a better picture on that. So we don't want the permanent reduction, so then we're going to postpone.
That is correct. And let me just mention, so everyone understands what the penalty is for starting it too early.
Please do.
If a FERS employee has between 10 and 19 years of service, and they've reached their MRA, they're eligible for what is called the MRA plus 10, or postponed retirement. And if they decide, listen, I want to start my annuity right away, I want to retire from federal service because I have another job lined up. The person is perfectly eligible to do that. However, because they are younger than age 62, their FERS annuity will be reduced permanently by 5% per year that they're under age 62. So if their MRA, let's say, Dan, is 56, that's 6 years under age 62, their annuity will be reduced by 6 times 5, which is 30%. Dan, that is a huge penalty.
Absolutely.
You have to understand, that's just the beginning of what's coming out of their annuity. We're talking about the annuity being subject to federal taxes, state taxes. If the person wants to keep his or her health insurance, life insurance, if they want to give a survivor benefit, they're taking a huge hit. They could end up with that annuity. The net annuity could be maybe 50% what they started with, if they're lucky, after everything comes out. So what's the alternative? Well, to get around the age reduction penalty, you could say, listen, tell you what, I'm going to start my annuity at 62. Would I be subject to the penalty? Nope, because you're starting it at age 62.
Okay.
Now, that's one example. And the second example I want to bring up is something that many, many employees, many, many personnel offices are not aware of. Unfortunately, I've run into benefit speakers who have not given the right information about this.
Me too. I've run into them too.
Okay. If a FERS employee has between 20 and 29 years of service, and they want to go out under the MRA plus 10 postponed retirement, they are allowed to. They've got at least 10 years of service, and they've reached their MRA. Mm-hmm. The age reduction for their annuity, if they take it starting at MRA, is 5% per year reduction for every year that they're under age 60,
right?
Not 62. So if we have an employee, FERS employee, who has, let's say, 28 years of service, age 58, and they want to start their annuity right away, then the penalty would be they're 2 years under age 60, 2 times 5 is 10%, a 10% reduction, not a 20% reduction had it been under age 62. So if that same employee says, wait a minute, I don't want to start my annuity at age 58. I'm going to wait until age 60 to start my annuity. Then there would be no 10% penalty. That's why they're postponing it.
And you also noted that the postponed annuity can't begin later than 2 days before their 62nd birthday.
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay. And is there any other condition beyond that?
In terms of the postponed annuity?
Yep.
Word of caution, everyone. Word of caution. Mm-hmm. If someone postpones the annuity, OPM is not psychic. They do not when you want to start. Nope. Sorry, Dan. They're not psychic. When you're ready to start receiving your annuity, you're postponing it. And it doesn't have to be, in the examples here at 62, you could start it at any time. But you have to give OPM formal notice that you want to start your annuity. And to do that, you have to fill out a form. And that form is, I'll say it very slowly, RI, which stands for Retirement and Insurance. This is an OPM form, 92-19. I point that out in the article. That form will be filled out, mailed to OPM. The address is there. On about 2 to 3 months before you want to start receiving the annuity. I want to emphasize that if that form is not filled out, not sent to OPM, OPM is going to do nothing. They'll not send you anything. So you have to you have to be very aware of the fact that OPM wants to hear from you when you're ready.
So you're doing paperwork on the front end to do the retirement part, and then you got to make sure you do this on the back end to make sure your annuity starts coming.
Yes, I think we're going to talk about the paperwork a little bit later, so the forms, more on the forms later on. But I just wanted to make that point now, Dan, because I've gotten questions from people who have emailed me, hey, I went out and I had a gentleman who lives not too far from me. He went out for 30 years of federal service in November 2018, and he was 54 years old. He was not eligible for immediate retirement. He went out at age 56. I'm sorry, his MRA with 28 years of service. He was not eligible for immediate retirement. He didn't have 30 years, so he did the MRA plus 10. And then about a couple years later, he said, I'm ready to follow. I just turned 60. I'm waiting for my check. Well, he asked me, where's the check? It must be the mail. I said, no, it's not the mail. My mail's bad, but it's not, I know what the problem is. Did you ever fill out the form RI-92-19? He said, no one ever told me that. I said, well, OPM's not going to do anything. So I told him what to do. He did it, and he got his first check within 2 months.
Okay. All right.
Lessons to be learned.
Make that note. Yep. Be sure to take a moment to read Ed's article. Now, the retirement side of things is really important, but, you know, some of the most important federal benefits are, you know, the health insurance and even the life insurance. How are they affected if you retire under MRA plus 10?
All right. Well, so when an individual goes out under the MRA plus 10 postponed retirement, when they leave federal service or retire from federal service, I emphasize the difference because if you postpone it, you're really leaving. You're not retiring. You're just leaving. If you take an immediate annuity, you are retiring.
Gotcha.
But either way, you'll get paid for all of your unused annual leave. That's you're paid in a lump sum payment at the time you retire or leave. Your unused sick leave will be converted to time and added to your service time for purposes of computing your FERS annuity, whether immediately or whether it's postponed. You don't get paid in a lump sum for unused sick leave, only your unused annual leave.
Mm-hmm.
Your health insurance, your TSP, let's do TSP, you're allowed, of course, to keep your TSP. You cannot contribute to it, though. Once you leave or retire, you're allowed to keep it. Now, the question comes up, can you start withdrawing it without penalty?
That's a tricky answer.
Yes, Dan. Can you take it out without penalty?
It depends on your age at the time. You would have to be at least 55, correct?
That is correct. So let's analyze what we just said. Someone goes out under the MRA plus 10, what is the minimum age they would be?
55,
because the MRA is between 55 and 57. So the answer is yes, you could start drawing your traditional TSB without a 10% early withdrawal penalty. You don't have to, but you can if you need to.
Okay.
You cannot contribute to it. Health insurance, if you've had the federal employees health insurance for yourself, maybe for your family, spouse, children, and you've been a participant in the program for at least all of the last 5 years preceding your departure or retirement from federal service, you get to keep your health and your health insurance. The same thing is true with life insurance. However, here's the problem, Dan. If someone postpones the start of their annuity, they do the postpone retirement.
Gotcha.
They postpone the start of their annuity. While they're postponing their annuity, they cannot be enrolled in the federal employees' health insurance and their federal employees' life insurance. Their
gotcha.
Coverage is being suspended. Once they start receiving their annuity, then the health insurance and life insurance benefits come back.
Got
they it. Come back, but only when they come back, only when they start receiving the annuity. And there's a reason for that, Dan. If they're not receiving the annuity, how would they be able to pay their premiums for their health and life insurance coverage?
Sure, no.
They're not getting an annuity check. They're not getting a paycheck.
Okay.
Other benefits, federal dental vision insurance. If they've been enrolled in the federal employees' dental and vision insurance during, let's say, the last year of their federal service, and they postpone, they get to keep that. If they take the immediate annuity, and they can, you know, they can like employees, they can drop it or pick it up later on during the open season every year.
Mm-hmm.
But if they postpone their annuity, they cannot have dental and vision insurance coverage until the annuity starts. And the last benefit, federal long-term care insurance. If an employee has been enrolled in federal long-term care insurance and they, let's say, choose to postpone retirement, they get to keep their federal long-term care insurance. But here's the problem. They have to make arrangements with the long-term care partners, the people who run the federal long-term care insurance, in order to pay the premiums. Either the
gotcha.
Premiums have to be coming out of a checking account or a savings account because this person who's left federal government is not getting a paycheck or an annuity check from which the long-term care insurance premiums can be deducted. Once their annuity starts, they can make arrangements to have the premiums for long-term care insurance taken out of their annuity check. So that's sort
gotcha.
Of a summary of the benefits, what happens during a postponed retirement.
Okay. Now, another big benefit to a federal annuity is the ability to take care of a survivor with it. Let's talk a little bit about how this might impact survivor benefits with the postponed MRA plus 10.
With the postponed retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. With the survivor annuity, the rule is this. In general, an employee who retires from federal service can give a survivor benefit to one person. For most
mm-hmm.
people, that person is going to be a spouse, and they have to pay for it. There's going to be a reduction in their annuity, okay? And that amount is equal to 50% of what the annuitant would get.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the problem. Obviously, when somebody retires, they're able to get the survivor annuity started. The survivor annuity would be there because
sure.
when the person applies for their retirement, they make that decision on the retirement application to choose a survivor annuity. If the person has children under the
mm-hmm.
age of 18 or 22, if they're still full-time students,
mm-hmm.
and the person would die, these children would get what's called children survivor benefits. Now, suppose a person chooses a postponed retirement, okay? the surviving benefit, the surviving spouse, okay, would get 50% of what the deceased former employee, unfortunately not to be not an annuitant, would have gotten. OPM will compute mm-hmm. the survivor annuities if the person had lived and started the annuity at whatever age the person had, usually 62.
Gotcha.
Children survivor benefits would also be paid, okay? And then the surviving spouse, by the way, would be eligible for the federal employee's health insurance, assuming that the person had the health insurance at the time of his or her death. At the time he or she left federal service, and the spouse was on that health insurance at the time of his at the time he left federal service. Okay.
Gotcha.
So that basically is a summary of survivor benefits under the MRA plus 10.
Okay. And so basically, you know, somebody takes care of their paperwork on the way out because they want to postpone, then they come back and they want to start those annuity payments, so they have paperwork they need to do there. One of the things you touch on in the article, and I think it's great advice throughout anybody's career, is to make sure that your beneficiary designations are up to date. And Ed, you include those forms in there. For TSP, it's the TSP-3. For FEGLI, it's SF-2823. SF-3102, designation of beneficiary for first contributions. And then for anybody who might be dropping in on CSRS for this call, SF-2808 is designation of beneficiary for CSRS contributions. And you've told many, many stories about how down the line people have been able to fill out those forms later and collect that money when they had been properly designated along the way. So that's one of the things we always urge people to do. We urge it at the seminars. We urge it in our part two of our seminars and our one-on-one meetings. Please, folks, take a moment. Make sure your beneficiaries are up to date. Wouldn't you agree, Ed?
Absolutely. It's part of estate planning. It's just part of yep. Everybody thinks you have to be rich in order to have an estate plan. No, everybody needs an estate plan, and part of one's estate planning is filling out all the beneficiary forms you can, including the ones you mentioned, Dan, and making sure they're up to date, please. Things
gotcha.
Like, you know, we make many changes, unfortunately, in life, you know, deaths in family, divorce,
sure.
separation, you know, cutting off relatives, things like that. We, again, we have to make sure our beneficiary forms are up to date with any family according to any personal change in circumstances.
Yep. And as always, Ed, a lot of incredibly good information here. Hopefully it makes folks realize how important it is to have good advice along the way. There are a ton of moving parts. You know, one of the things I'll toss out now, we have added asked@stwsurf.com. So if you have a question for Ed directly, go ahead and shoot that to us. We'll make sure it gets to him. The crew at Serving Goes to Serve, Ed presses us and tests us and makes us sit in class if we don't test well. So he makes sure that we're able to answer things along the way. Ed, as usual, great stuff. Thank you very much. Folks, that's a wrap. Ed will be back. You will be back, right, Ed?
And, absolutely.
As part of a mission to reach, teach, and serve you, we are serving those who serve. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on our YouTube channel and also on Spotify. Remember to share it with your friends, strangers, even a few enemies. Throw them in there. Because we have regular listeners right now, and if each Fed will reach another Fed, we're going to be able to help more Feds each day. Right, Ed?
Absolutely. Pass the word.
Yep. Check us out on Twitter and LinkedIn. Okay. Now, I need to tell you about one of the things that we're super excited about. Obviously, if you've gone to our website, you know that as a result of taking the proper precautions for the coronavirus outbreak, we are not doing the in-person seminars for the time being. Our plan is to get back to them as soon as it is safe. Your safety is our utmost concern, but we have made tremendous strides towards virtual ed. And that's not virtual education. That's virtual Ed Zerndorfer. So we will have a tax and TSP webinar coming up, and you will actually get to meet our firstborn son, Wes Battle. If you go back through the podcast, you'll hear his introduction. He and Ed will be teaming up for that webinar, and we have an entire series that we're laying out. We're just getting it through, dotting all the I's and cross the T's. We're excited to bring it to you. And what this is really going to give us the ability to do is help people outside of the DMV. So this is a case where, you know, lemons were handed, and Ed has pitched in, and we've got some really good lemonade coming, and be sure to watch for that. So be sure to read Ed every month in the Fed Zone, and that's at blog.swserve.com and also fed-zone.com. So for Ed, the crew here at Serving Those Who Serve, and me, Dan Seip, good luck, Godspeed, please stay safe, please stay well. And as I always remind you, remember, it's your Fed life, make it a great one, because you deserve it. Stay well, everybody, we are out.
Thank you for listening to the Fed Life Podcast. Click the subscribe button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Serving Those Who Serve or Raymond James. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investment planning. Securities offered through Raymond James Financial Services Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Raymond James Financial Services Advisors Incorporated. Serving Those Who Serve is not a registered broker dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services.
Raymond James is not affiliated and does not endorse the opinions or services of any of the quoted professionals or their respective firms. Any opinions are those of Dan Seip and not necessarily those of RJFS or Raymond James. This case study is for illustrative purposes only. Individual cases will vary.
Neither Raymond James Financial Services nor any Raymond James Financial Advisor renders advice on tax issues. These matters should be discussed with the appropriate professional. Investing involves risk, and you may incur a profit or loss regardless of strategy selected, including diversification and asset allocation.
Raymond James is not affiliated with and does not endorse the opinions or services of the quoted professionals or their respective organizations.